Austrian football is back in action for 2024. So, of course, we are back for 2024 as well. In this episode of the Other Bundesliga podcast, we've got some cup quarterfinals to review and some tasty Bundesliga games to look forward to. Yes, the Other Bundesliga podcast is back for 2024. My name's Tom Midler, and I'm joined today by special guest Anna Konovalova. Anna, it's lovely to have your knowledge, your enthusiasm for Austrian football on the pod once again. How are you doing? And you were in Austria recently, weren't you? I think you made it to some games.
Yes, exactly. First of all, thanks for inviting me. It's always a pleasure to be a part of the podcast. And yes, you are correct. I have visited two of the four cup games this past weekend. And yeah, we have plenty to talk about, I think.
Yeah. Did you even bump into Lee when you were in Vienna? Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Just beside the Stephan's Dome. So that was like a fun coincidence. And yeah, Vienna is a village.
Yes, it very much is. A small world, isn't it? Well, that's awesome. Thanks a lot for coming on today's pod. I'm really glad to have you on. Before we get down to the business of the four very decent cup ties which took place in the last couple of days, I just want to give a quick shout out to everybody who very generously bought the Other Bundesliga some beers on buymeacoffee.com/Other Bundesliga recently. That's Werner, Philipp, Dan and Archie, Mark Andre, Connor, Adam, Tim, and any lovely anonymous people who bought us beers as well. buymeacoffee.com/Other Bundesliga is the place that you can do that. And if you want to support us actually in a different way, there is a place you can do that. Until the 16th of February, you can nominate us as one of the best Austrian podcasts. If you're listening before the 16th of February, please do search for the Ö3 Podcast Awards. Ö3 or OE3 is one of Austria's main radio stations. We'll link that in the episode description and, of course, on our Twitter and things like that too. If you look for Ö3 or the Ö3 Podcast Awards, you can nominate the Other Bundesliga once per day. Google Translate is also available on that page if you need it, and a nomination would be extremely nice of you. We'd really appreciate it as we're trying to reach some more people, especially here in Austria. Anyway, Anna, let's start with the cup ties. It was quarterfinal time to kick things off for 2024. LASK 2, Salzburg 3 was the very first game, the reopening. I was there, you were there. What did you think of the game?
First of all, yeah, it's a really cool tie to start the spring part of the season with. And we were really lucky to have this draw because it's a big game. Obviously, LASK are very ambitious this season, and Salzburg are looking quite interesting to dive in deep detail about, because they are not looking as invincible as we are usually used to see them. And the amount of goals we've seen in this fixture actually proves that, because normally you don't see Salzburg missing two goals in a game where they are really set and focused to do that. But they didn't look so focused, did they?
No, I thought LASK would be really kicking themselves after this. That was sort of my main takeaway, because I thought it was quite an even game. It wasn't a dominant Salzburg game, even though for a lot of the second half they were 3-1 up and they were never really in trouble on the scoreboard per se. But I think if you look at the goals that Salzburg scored, LASK will be very frustrated at the way they went in. It seemed like the LASK defence was just completely porous those moments. So I felt like Salzburg didn't have to work very hard for their three goals. And as you say, it's not always that you can score twice against Salzburg. So LASK have managed that. They've scored twice, and yet they were still on the back foot because their defence was too leaky.
Yeah, exactly. But speaking from the offensive and on the ball point of view, the first half from LASK was very, very solid. And in the second half, there also were like small moments of, I'd say, even dominance. So that was a really great performance that had no fruit in the end, because when you just miss goals like LASK missed, and yeah, two set piece situations and so on, this is really something to regret about, because there was clearly more for LASK in this game that the end result showed.
Yeah, I thought they started really well. You know, it was coming back after the winter break. Of course, it was an interesting tie because Lask are playing at home as well, so they've got that extra little advantage. And I think individually they matched up against the Salzburg players really well, and they were giving them trouble, especially in the first 10, 15 minutes. The Salzburg players couldn't really create anything, they couldn't flow. But like you said, I think Lask will be really scratching their heads as to how they've gone in 2-1 behind, because it was a set piece that was floated into the area with a kind of fake delivery, a double fake delivery, and that just caused chaos in the box. And to be fair to Luka Gonadua, it was a lovely finish when the loose ball came his way, but it was a bit of a mess from Lask. And then the other one was just, you know, it was a simple corner headed in. So Salzburg have got two goals without ever really being on top in the first half.
Yeah, exactly. That's how it looked from the stands and on the TV, probably too. And yeah, this will clearly be a match where Lask will be regretting of the chances they missed and of the disorganization, like small moments of disorganization that costed them a lot. Because yeah, as we see, Salzburg aren't looking like their usual selves for the past weeks and months, and like the winter break hasn't changed much. And also, as we've seen, Salzburg in a new system with a back three that we've seen with experiments during the friendly games before this match, and this looks like a system that's set to stay at least for a while, especially with Flavius Danilyuk's transfer and so on. But yeah, this game could have other outcomes.
Yes, it definitely could have been different. Salzburg made it 3-1 early in the second half, and then it was just Lask pushing and pushing, and again playing quite well at times as they looked to come back into it. It was interesting to see Alex Schlager making a couple of really good saves against Lask in Linz. That just felt weird to look at, but he made probably more good saves than Laval had to make.
Yeah, absolutely. And in general, Alex Schlager is having probably even potentially the best season of his career. Because yeah, at his prime at Lask, there were also very good nice times. But right now, he is just on a different level after a couple of seasons of more mediocre performances, I'd say, at the end of his last stint. But yeah, he came back to his old place and had a really, really great game.
Yeah, and credit to Fernando as well, who was on a yellow card for large parts of that game, picked up a booking early, but stayed on long enough to score two goals and ultimately swing the tie in Salzburg's favour. So Lask miss a chance. And it is an annoying one because I feel like Lask have been a good team in Austria now, a very good team for quite a few years. Like we're coming up to sort of half a decade of Lask being a really good team. And they haven't got a trophy out of it. Of course, it's really hard to get a trophy. Last one they got was winning the second division not that long ago. But this cup, you know, the cup is always going to be, or for the next few years at least, a more realistic possibility for them to get a trophy than the league. So, you know, if they'd have got past Salzburg, they would have had a massive chance to lift the cup and actually get some silverware.
Yeah, potentially. And it's very obvious, as you said, that in Austria, this is the only realistic chance to for someone to win anything tangible. But was there really that much from their performance to just suggest that they are potential cup winners? Then again, we still have Sturm, we still have Rapid, okay, with their own struggles and so on. So basically, out of those teams who made it to the semifinals, there are more candidates for that.
I think it's a very, very fair point. I'm just looking at it in the sense of as soon as Salzburg are out, if anybody gets past Salzburg, you know, and had Lask actually beaten Salzburg themselves, they would immediately go into that position of, oh, they've beaten Salzburg, therefore
Yeah,
they're going to
obviously
be one of the
that's.
big, you know, the biggest hopes to win.
Yeah, like it happened last year with Sturm when they kicked Salzburg out quite early and then it was theirs to take. So.
Yeah, I mean, imagine if you knocked out Salzburg and then didn't win the cup, then you'd feel really rough then, you know. You've beaten the team, you've beaten the cup winner elect, and then if you didn't go on to win it, you'd be very annoyed. But my final memory of the game was actually probably my first impression of the game. I don't know if you saw this in the media section, but I was in with the fans and they had these like styrofoam hearts on cardboard A4 cardboard things. It was a great initiative. It was like a world record attempt for CPR training. So awesome, really good thing. Go and look that up. You can easily find out online how to do the very basics of CPR. Really important that you know what to do in that situation, even if it's just really simple stuff. So they were teaching everyone that in the stadium, pumping away on the hearts. And then what happens at a football stadium when there's something left on every seat that people just don't need anymore or don't want anymore? They throw it down. And my seats were like row two in the corner. So I was like right down at the front. And like you're getting rained on by these A4 pieces of card. It wasn't just a piece of paper. It was like solid cardboard. And if you sort of toss it out like a frisbee, you know, it like floats around in the air. And then they come at you with this like angle. You know, I was like, if that hits me in the eye, I got a couple hit on the head, didn't do anything. But I was like, if that hits me in the eye, this is so ironic. These things are there for sort of health and safety knowledge. And I swear somebody's going to get injured by one of these raining red bits of cardboard.
Yeah, exactly. And some of the fans saved them to show their reaction after a Salzburg goal, too. So the first portion was thrown out right after this action ended. And then some of them even made it to in the direction of some Salzburg players after the first goal, I think.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And just as when I thought I was safe at that point because they'd all been thrown down, as you say, the goals go in and then suddenly more of them are raining down. So that was my overriding memory of LASK 2, Salzburg 3. But it was a really nice way to open the new year, at least. Salzburg did go through to the semi-finals. LASK will be left with some regrets, but a 5-goal opener. Some positives to take for LASK and some things to work on for Salzburg as well. But crucially, they're into the next round. And joining them there later on the Friday evening was Sturm Graz, because they came past FAK, Austria Vienna, by 2-0 at home. And thanks to the pleasure of the ORF, I was able to take the train home and watch that game on my phone on the way back.
Yeah, I could only catch some highlights, but yeah.
I don't think you missed all that much, to be honest. If you saw the highlights, we had the goals, 2 goals from Sturm. It was pretty much holding Austria Vienna at arm's length for most of the game. I don't really recall Austria Vienna creating nearly anything, except there was a half chance for Gruber that went over the bar, I think. And it was a case of a team that are better than their opposition are playing them at home. And they're playing solidly, they're playing well, and they just don't give the opposition really any chance to create anything. So it seemed like it was very much as you'd have expected the game to go on paper, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not a big change from what we've seen in the past weeks of before the winter break. So it's nothing, not that much of news for that.
No, that's true. I suppose the biggest news would be Mika Bierth scoring on his debut for Sturm. He scored already in some of the winter friendlies, and now he scored on his competitive debut, so he started really strongly. And Vít Jarosz, the new goalkeeper, replacing the injured Kjell Scherper, he didn't have anything to do, I don't think. I think Jarosz had probably the most boring debut of the Cup quarterfinals.
It's better to be safe in this way. But yeah, it was a fun tie from the goalkeeping perspective, because Austria Vienna as well have some issues with their goalkeeping department, because Chris Fruchtl, who had a pretty decent autumn part of the season, got unfortunately injured, and he will be represented by Mirko Kos in the next weeks. And yeah, from what I've seen, it's hard to blame him in the goals that Austria Vienna missed in this tie, but eventually that was interesting to see two goalkeepers with not as much experience before with their teams.
Yeah, I saw that Kos was playing in goal, but I actually missed out. I didn't remember that Fruchtl was injured, but yeah, I mean, they've got a good person to deputise there, but Fruchtl, as you say, did do a really good job, so it's a bit of a loss for Austria Vienna. Yeah, out of the cup, it was always going to be a difficult ask for them to go and win in Graz, but Sturm, to their credit, they'll be delighted to get the job done in such a safe and simple way. You know, there was no risk of an upset, no drama. They're sailing through. The cup holders are into the semi-finals. We haven't got the draw yet, but of course they could be drawing against Salzburg. Let's see. And then on Saturday night, to move to the third of the four cup quarterfinals, it was Leoben against Altach. So second division Leoben against Bundesliga Altach. Leoben won, obviously, 2-1. Can you even call this an upset? It was so predictable that I'm not sure if it counts as a cup set or not.
Yes and no at the same time, because when you see a tie like that, it just feels like this is going to happen. Even though I can't really say Alta has been struggling that much before the break and so on. So, but yeah, here we are, Leoben and the glorious Danny Aller, with probably one of the best matches of his past years.
Yes, Aller, I think he's a former Bundesliga Golden Boot winner, is he not? And now he's in the second division, but the quality, honestly, the quality of the second goal especially, it was wonderful. There's like great skill from, I think, the young Scottish guy who's on loan from Bayern Munich down the right-hand side, and then knocked it into Aller sort of on the corner of the area, and then he just bent it into the far corner in the 88th minute. So it was sort of, you knew that was going to happen at that point. But I couldn't help but notice by watching the game that the pitch looked absolutely awful. It looked shocking. It was like worse than what I was used to sort of playing football on old, used, frozen rugby fields from my upbringing in the UK. It looked terrible.
But then again, we're in early February. What did you expect from a Liga 2 pitch?
Yeah, exactly.
It's a classic. It's an absolute classic.
I guess, but by this point in the quarterfinals, the UFB are kind of hoping that all the ties are played at, you know, at bigger grounds.
Yeah.
Yeah, you almost had it. You know, you had the Raiffeisen in Linz. It's like perfect. And then in Graz, obviously the stadium has some troubles of its own, but it's still, it's a big Bundesliga stadium in Graz. The other tie was played at Rapid, obviously another modern, wonderful stadium, beautiful pitch. And then the fourth one in Leoben. So a little bit different.
But then again, even some Bundesliga stadiums normally suffer around those weeks, because we'll see what's probably a Wesge Tirol home game this weekend. And I'm like not impressed beforehand.
No.
Because usually we know how it looks.
That is very, very true. I mean, if anyone should be used to playing on a bad pitch, it should probably be Altach as well, just given their geographical location. You'd expect they get a bit more severe weather than most places, and they're probably used to playing on a tougher pitch, right?
Not really, because their greenkeeping has been handling the situation pretty well. I don't really remember big issues with their stadium. They are not like notoriously known for terrible pitches at the end of autumn or beginning of spring. Normally, the usual suspects in the Bundesliga should be Tirol or whoever plays at Tivoli in Innsbruck, and unfortunately, Graz.
Yeah.
But they improved. They improved, seriously. After that situation, I think last season, when they were banned from playing a home game due to the pitch quality, they did make some improvements with that, and it's not as awful as it normally looks in cold months.
No, that's true. And it's been a few years since I was thinking of problems at Altach, actually. I think that's something I remember from sort of early days of my time in Austria. So shout out also to the Altach groundskeepers. But yes, the open pitch was terrible. Altach equalised. They went behind 1-0 early on, and then they equalised with a very ugly goal from a corner that the keeper completely misjudged. And then it was sort of nodded in at the back post. I noticed that the camera zoomed in on Ati Nuhiu after that, because you just assume if anyone's going to score a sort of an ugly header at the back post from a corner, it must have been Nuhiu, but it actually wasn't. It was his teammate Rainer, I think, instead, who scored it. But yeah, Altach stayed there at 1-1. You thought they could have avoided the upset, maybe. It would have been their first ever cup semi-final. You know, there's money, there's a bit of money in it. There's a chance to get to the final. You know, there's another big home or away tie in the semis. They'll be disappointed, won't they, either way, even though we all thought Leoben had the capability to do this. They will be disappointed.
Yeah, obviously, when you get a draw like that, you automatically assume that it's not going to be a very hard task eventually, even though we all know how the story goes and that the underdogs really have big chances normally in this case, and especially in the Austrian Cup, where cup sets happen every round.
Yeah, if I remember rightly, Leoben have been in the final actually before, back in the 90s. So who knows, maybe they can do it again this time. I think my favourite moment of the weekend was what Dani Aller said when he was asked about his Wunschgegner, which is a lovely German word for like the opponents that you want to play next. Did you see what he said?
No, actually.
So this is great. I've not seen somebody do this before. He said, I want to get Rapid in the semi-finals and Sturm in the final.
That was smart. But in his personal case, he clearly has something to say about both of those teams, because as we know, Daniel had a long history at Rapid, and that he was Sturm's captain at some point. And the way he left both of the teams was, well, debatable in a way. And he clearly has something to say to both of those teams. So
yeah,
we'll see. There is a big chance he gets either of them in the semifinals.
Definitely. I hope his wish comes true, to be honest. That would be pretty amazing. But I just thought, of course, as you say, he's got this great story with both Rapid and Sturm, you know, this revenge that he wants to get on his old clubs, kind of. But it's just amazing. I don't think I've ever heard somebody pick two opponents out before when asked. They're like, I want to get these guys in the next round, and then we're going to obviously beat them, so I want these guys in the round after. I'm sure other people have done it before. Maybe people can write in on Twitter with other people that have been sort of a little bit arrogant almost with their cup requests for who to play next. But
that's
it made
quite
me
some confidence. Some self-confidence, why not?
Yeah, he's like saying, we'll get Rapid in the semis. We'll obviously beat Rapid. And then, we'll see Sturm in the final. This is our turn against Sturm. Let's see. I mean, stranger things have happened. Let's be honest. Stranger things have happened.
And I can almost guarantee that if it's going to be Rapid or Sturm, there's going to be at least one goal from Aller.
Yeah.
Like, this is how the story normally goes.
Inevitable. So Aller got the brace. He's the hero for Leoben. And Rapid had the last of the cup quarterfinals on Sunday. They were playing at home. Favourable draw for them at home against second division St. Pölten. Alar says he'll go and beat Rapid in the semi-finals if they draw it. Rapid have got themselves there, but they did make life a little bit difficult at first, didn't they? Or to their credit, St. Pölten made life difficult for Rapid, especially in the first half.
I think it's more of a Rapid issue eventually, because the first half an hour of the game was very, very questionable from the Rapid perspective. They clearly struggled. They struggled with everything in all phases of the game. And they also managed to miss an early penalty and then try to start saving themselves from that situation with another penalty that they got in their favor.
Yeah, so they conceded the penalty really early on. It was a handball, wasn't it? The cross came in from the right flank. The defender sort of shields it. I think it's Gergic who sort of shields his body with his arm. He's twisting around. His arm sort of sticks out in the end. I think ultimately it was a long VAR check, but it was a penalty.
Yeah.
And then
to me as well.
I mean, credit to Rapid. They struggled still after going 1-0 down. It was Stefan Nutz, another player with some history there, who slotted away the penalty to put St. Pölten 1-0 up. And they were deserving of that lead, you know. For the first half hour, as you said, they were on top. They got the goal through the penalty. They were looking great. And then it became a very messy first half later on with all kinds of penalty claims, Rapid claiming for everything. I think you could sense that they knew their best chance of getting back into the game was with something like a penalty. And that is indeed what happened. It was another handball. St. Pölten this time conceded the penalty. And Marco Grull put it away.
Yeah, absolutely. There was a clear sense of that there should be an event that changes the game, but it couldn't come from open play. Absolutely. Like, there was no way of something happening from open play at that point.
No, I think the only thing I can give Rapid some credit, though, because I think they did try. They realized, basically, at some point in the first half, they're like, look, this is not going the way we want it to go. This is not the restart that we needed after the winter break. Something isn't working. And Robert Klaus seemed to just have a few conversations with players and just shift one or two things. And it's really frustrating, isn't it, when you're a home fan at somewhere like Rapid and your team have got sort of less intensity than a second division side and they're looking really up for the cup set. But to be fair, they got a bit of luck with the penalty, another sort of questionable handball with a cross that was floated over. But they did change things eventually. At some point, they got back on top of it. And then they were able to turn it on and eventually win reasonably comfortably in the second half.
Yeah, there were small adjustments at the end of first half and probably around halftime. And then things got smoother around the 65 minutes mark when there were the first substitutions. Where Sattelberger replaced Kerfbaum in the midfield, and that was a change that was very, very fair and very logical just from the beginning. Actually, I've seen people on Twitter complaining why eventually Kerfbaum made it to the starting 11, and I have to say I sort of agree with this. question. And from there, things went smoother and much more comfortable. And we also could see the debut of Jovan Živković, who is a star of their second team and a big prospect in attack for Rapid. That was a very positive moment because that was his debut for the first team overall.
Yeah, and he had some positive moments as well, didn't he? He had one good chance where he ran into the box and couldn't score ultimately. By that point, Christoph Lang had already been replaced. Former Hartberg, former Sturm man.
Exactly. He was substituted by Živković, actually.
So. Exactly, yeah. So two debuts for Rapid. Obviously, yeah. One coming up from the second team, as you said. Another one, the new transfer from Hartberg / Sturm. What did you make of Christoph Lang's debut? It wasn't exactly a dream, was it? But
no, he struggled, but as all attacks struggled, so probably not the debut he was hoping for, but then again, nothing too remarkable to say that it wasn't that lucky.
No, I agree. And then ultimately, so Gruel's penalty got Rapid back to 1-1. They went on to win it. There was an own goal with a cross that was deflected in. So they did have a bit of fortune in the game, Rapid. St. Pölten can count themselves a little bit unlucky, but then Matthias Seidel sealed the deal with a low shot that snuck under the keeper late on. Rapid are through. So it's Rapid, Leoben, Sturm and Salzburg into the cup quarterfinals. I think my moment of the game from Rapid St. Pölten was, if anyone was watching it on ORF, if anybody was watching it on the TV, they actually cut early on to ski jumping. They wanted to show the end of the ski jumping. And the other the other ORF sports channel had something else on. I think it had Equestrian or something on. So they've got two channels. The Rapid game is due to be on one of them. And then it's cut over for the ski jumping. And then the ski jumping finishes. And then they go through all these adverts and things after that. They don't just cut straight back to the game. They go through a good like 5 minutes worth of adverts. And then it comes back and it's Rapid 0, St. Pölten 1. And I'm sure loads of people, there'll be tons of fans who are watching that on TV, tons of Rapid fans watching it on TV. And they must have just been thinking, oh, come on. Like, not only did we miss it, we're now 1-0 down. But they got through in the end.
Yeah, that's some interesting planning from ORF in this way. But yeah, ski jumping can last long, so it's unpredictable at times.
Yeah, they wanted to just cut through to the last couple of jumps to see who won, but then it got the last few jumps got delayed because of wind or whatever, so it all took a bit longer.
Yeah,
than
like planned. It always happens with ski jumping.
Exactly, yes, to be expected. Before we wrap up this cup segment, I'd ask you to put yourself in the shoes of Denny Allard. Who would you like to see in the next round? Who would you like, you know, what would your ideal semi-final draw be?
That's a difficult question because obviously I do not want a Salzburg Sturm tie as early as in the semi-finals, so I'm fine with either combination apart from this, because Sturm have won the cup last year, but they've thrown Salzburg pretty early on in the tournament, and that was like, this excitement was missing a little bit in the final. Of course, that was a great tie with Rapid, but we know who the arch nemesis are. And probably if we get a final like that this year, that's going to be really great.
Yeah, I think that would be good. I know what you mean, to avoid Salzburg Sturm in the semi-final. Maybe if they do draw, I mean, Sturm knocked them out in Salzburg last year. So let's see. But I mean, Sturm Rapid as a semi-final would be pretty good, wouldn't it? That would be pretty
good. Yeah, absolutely.
Good.
That's a massive fixture.
People would be annoyed then that Salzburg would get Leoben. So they'd be like, oh, come on. It's like making it easy for Salzburg.
That's a free pass for them.
Yeah, Salzburg are the one team that are maybe immune to a kind of cup shock. We'll see. Anyway, looking forward to the draw. That'll be out this Sunday coming. So on the first week back of Bundesliga games, the draw will be made. We'll, of course, be tweeting all about that and letting you know, and looking forward to those cup semi-finals. But we'll take a quick break there and we'll look at some transfers and the fixtures that are still to come as the Bundesliga gets going again. Welcome back to part two of the pod. Anna, what news or transfers caught your eye the most, perhaps, over the winter in Austria? What's the first thing that springs to mind that was interesting?
Actually, I think I have three answers to this question. But
all right.
But I'm probably going to start with the most like sentimental one, because Thomas Geuginger, one of the best players of the league, left LASK after six or how much years?
I knew you'd bring this up. I knew you'd, you'd go for Thomas Geuginger. I think there's a picture of us somewhere, right, outside the Austria training ground with, you and Thomas Geuginger. I think I'm the photographer in that particular ensemble. But Goigi is obviously a club legend, a favourite. And yeah, it's sad to see him go.
And sad to see him go like this way, because probably his career was a very, very rapid rise, because we all know, we all love in the Austrian football this archetype of Dorfkickers, of players who play in lower divisions until like very, very late in their development, just flying under the radars of big clubs and then just at 20 something emerging in professional football. And we normally get stories like that every couple of seasons, and those characters are always very brilliant from all the perspective on and off the pitch. And Goigi was probably one of the brightest examples of that in the past decade, and his time with LASK was really, really great. He's had a couple of seasons where he would, could probably have been the best player of the league overall. But in the end, how his career developed was pretty unfortunate, because in March 2020, he tore his ACL, and at that point there were talks of like German Bundesliga clubs being interested. So, for example, Mönchengladbach with Marco Rose at the helm at that point. So he tore his ACL and sadly never really came back to the heights that he reached before. So that's a big what if around him, and this is why it's a little bit of a sad end, but then again, we all enjoyed all his seasons at his prime in the league.
Yeah,
a great he went to Osnabrück, which is not like a dream destination, because they are last in the second Bundesliga, and it's not like the brightest thing that could have happened, but it's clearly the probably the step towards the end of his career.
Yeah, as you say, it's a bit painful watching him play for Osnabrück. You know, they're well down at the bottom of the table. They're really struggling. They got a point this weekend. He did come on for his debut, which I sort of kept an eye on that. But yeah, he's been such a great player to watch. And it's a shame. And at the moment, it seems like it's like the LASK generation is sort of being broken up. They've got this massive squad now. There's sort of no place in there for Michiel. Goigi's left. Yeah, it's a bit of a different era, isn't it? You said you had three answers, so I'll let you go straight on to number two rather than throw in my own.
So I'm really excited to see how the loan of Flavius Daniluk goes to Salzburg, because he's a very exciting young player, young defender with some interesting set of skills, like a very, very modern type of defender. And he also has like a really great academic background, because he's been part of the Real Madrid youth system, part of the Bayern München youth system. And he already played about like 50 games in the Serie A by the age of 22, which is like big thing actually. And as the Salzburg are transitioning to a back three system, having a defender of his qualities come in, especially when there is a vacancy there, because Samson Baydoo got injured and will miss the next few months. And I'm really excited to see how he fits in the system, because from my point of view, he could be a great addition.
Yeah, he's somebody that we've talked about for a while. Daniluk's sort of been on the radar because obviously he's an Austrian player, but doesn't have a big history of playing in Austria, certainly not.
Absolutely not, yeah.
Exactly. So I'm interested just to see him come to Austria, because he's, every time there's a national team selection, whether he's in there or not, he's always the debate, like, oh, shouldn't he be in the side? Shouldn't he be going to the Euros? He's surely good enough, but we don't see him. We don't know much about him. So that's definitely a really exciting transfer and one to watch. And Salzburg weren't that busy in this transfer window by their standards. They were sort of, they'll be busier in summer, I would imagine. But yeah, as you say, this has like a tactical repercussion as well for the team. There's a logical gap there. Looking forward to seeing him play. For me, the interesting transfer, or the most interesting sort of transfer market team in winter, were Rapid. And that's with obviously Lang, who we talked about. I feel a bit for Hartberg here, because Hartberg have lost one of their Leistungsträger, you know, one of their main players, the first name on the team sheet. He's gone. Lang, I thought, did a great job at Hartberg. I'm surprised, really, that Sturm didn't want to keep him as sort of some of their next generation. Maybe you've got a different opinion on that, but I thought he'd be somebody that Sturm are looking to say, yeah, in the next few years, we could sort of start bringing him in. Obviously, they've sold him for like less than €1 million. They didn't get a lot of money for him. So obviously they weren't too bothered to let him go to a rival, if you can call Rapid a rival of Sturm at the moment. But then there's also this sort of whole merry-go-round at Rapid where Nick Kuhn has gone to Celtic. I think most people think that's quite good business. He has a lot of potential, but he's a good candidate to sell. They got more than €3 million, I think, for him. So a good bit of financial boost there. And then on the other hand, Rapid basically said, look, we've made some money off Nick Kuhn. That means let's not make money off Marco Grühl. Obviously, they would have ideally done both, but the choice was sort of like, we've sold Kuhn. That means we can keep Grühl and he'll go on a free transfer. We know that now. He's going to Werder Bremen. And I think Rapid kind of just took that on board and said, look, we sold one. We can't sell both because otherwise we'll take too big of a sporting hit. Do you think they made the right decisions there?
With Rapid, it's always difficult to discuss those things because that's been a trend for them and for the past several years that they keep losing and losing and losing their key players on a free. That creates some questions towards the sporting management of the club. And obviously, there are new people at the sporting management of the club, but the pattern is still there. Here in this situation, it's pretty fair to see that you were probably right, and there was a debate of how can we solve this puzzle. But then again, if they lost Grühl right now, not on a free, just for money, it would not have been a big amount of money anyway, because obviously when you're on your last 6 months of the contract, it's never a lucrative deal. And then again, yes, Rapid always struggles with contract extensions, and this is something they probably should pay very close attention to because it's been happening for seasons and seasons. But in this way, probably they got the best out of the situation because the deal they got for Kuhn was pretty decent. And probably by their standards and by their normal transfer income, they can afford to solve the puzzle this way. But generally speaking, yes, this is a big overhaul, but in this case, it's extended for 6 months because they will have to solve the Grühl replacement problem, but it's not their problem right here and right now. It's going to be their problem in summer.
Yeah, I think you're right. There's a feeling amongst Rapid fans that if Kuhn's gone for 3.4 million or whatever he went for, then Grühl is probably worth 4 million or something. You know, So there's a feeling like they didn't cash in on a €4 million player, which at this level for Rapid, that's a huge amount of money. But ultimately, as you say, he probably would have gone for what I can imagine him going for, like 750,000 or €1 million at the most right now, because he's coming towards the end of that contract period. So in a way, they've lost out on a 4 or 5 million player. In a way, they also haven't lost out on that much. The problem is more, how do they get themselves or stop themselves from getting into that position in the future, because people will be annoyed, because ultimately Grühl is like a multiple player of the season for Rapid. He's often just one of the most important players. We saw him. He was one of the few players that played really well in their poor European Cup run at the start of the qualifiers this year. So he is a guy who has an impact. You know, he was crucial in them getting through in the Cup as well at their difficult period against St. Pölten. So he is a player who's got an impact. They've opted to keep him. It's like not quite as bad, but we see the same things with Austria Vienna all the time as well, don't they? How many times have we talked about both Vienna clubs giving away their best players? Ultimately, they get themselves into these situations where they can't keep hold of their best players and they lose them, not just losing them, but they lose them for little to no money. And it does hurt a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's very obvious that in the current financial situation both clubs are in, like one worse and one not as bad, but still in general they're not swimming in money for obvious reasons. It's clear that in this situation sometimes you just can't give your key player the contract that he would probably have wished for himself, and obviously they get to look elsewhere and end up moving away from those clubs. But if it happens all the time, if it happens every window, because we have the same debate every single half a year. So this is probably something that has to be solved somehow. And if we look around, clubs in leagues of similar budgets and so on, yeah, there are also examples of clubs that struggle with that, but there are also clubs who solve this problem somehow. So probably there should be a decision.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's a big task for Markus Katzer, for Steffen Hoffmann, and the rest of the responsible people in the club, especially now where we see some positive steps ahead for Rapid from different perspectives, because, yeah, like there are problems that are being solved step by step, not fast, not just by a click of a hand, but they are moving somewhere, and they should probably be included in the itinerary.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're right. I did read some very concerning things when it came to Austria Vienna this winter. Obviously, you never quite know, but it seems like they keep, for those on the outside looking in, it's like they always have trouble with the license and then they always eventually get it. And then they always have trouble again the next time and then they eventually get it. But it seems like this pattern of them sort of almost like a zombie sort of lurching from one thing to the next. It is slowly, slowly getting worse, and sort of the deadline is I feel like from what I've read in this winter, the sort of deadline is now kind of on the horizon of like, we know they keep lurching from one thing to the next. We know they're trying to very slowly solve the problems that they've got there financially. But it's like, I read something about like the club's escape strategy, and it's basically like, yeah, we need to get top six. They didn't say this. This is not what the club is saying, but by reading between the lines, it's like the only way realistically that the club can continue is if in the next couple of years they're constantly in the top six, constantly in the European qualifiers, constantly succeeding in the European qualifiers to get into the group stages and cashing in on the group stages and selling their best players for like reasonable sums of money. A la VRC had just sold Bamba for 5 million this winter. That went a bit under the radar, but 5 million for VRC, huge. Why can't the other clubs do that? Question mark. That's a different question, but still, it does seem like this sort of the realities now, if you read between the lines for Austria Vienna, are looking pretty, it's a stretch of the imagination, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is already seeming like a case where probably their biggest hope is towards this too big to fail phenomenon that Bundesliga is not going to deny them license, isn't it? Like they will find an escape in the last moment every time and every time, because this is seriously like dancing on a razor blade for several seasons. And the numbers, the figures we see in the financial reports every November or December when they come up are terrible, because like it's impossible to drag this amount of debt from one report to another without some repercussions. But then again, it's one of the most historic clubs of the league, and what Bundesliga is going to do, not knock them out. But then again, we're speaking about Austria, where, well, two decades ago, there was a series of big clubs folding, big historical clubs folding, like the FC Tirol, whose last attempt for survival was similar to the plan that Austria Vienna have right now, like the selling and leasing the stadium back, which does sound like a very, very dangerous financial plan, because if anything goes wrong, they don't have anything to rely on. And so
it's scary, isn't it, when you start talking about selling off the stadium?
Yeah, it's like the last desperate step that never leads to anything. It just buys a year or two of time, which is not going to lead anywhere if big changes don't come. And there is right now, from this perspective, there is nowhere to expect those changes coming from. So their only hope is just to rely on the fact that Bundesliga will just close their eyes once again, and next year once again, and then once again. But there should be a point when it should stop.
As you say, if you look to the past, though, like the too big to fail phenomenon has proven that that isn't the case. It's Austria. There's a whole list of like title winners, cup winners, teams who've won the league and then gone on to play in Europe. And then like 3 years later, they don't really exist in the same form anymore. So I don't mean to be this negative, but really, I read a few in-depth things. I'll try and link them somewhere. I can share them if I can find them again. But I read some really interesting things, and they had me they had me feeling a bit worried about the future of Austria Vienna, because it would be a total disaster for them and for the league, you know, if they were, if they do a Wacker Innsbruck or whatever, and they're down in the,
yeah,
in the
or
lower reaches.
For example, who took like 10 years to get back to professional football after that for similar reasons.
Yeah, it does unfortunately seem like that might be on the cards for the next few decades, but who knows? Should we move on to the fixture list for this weekend, the return of the Bundesliga? Because
yeah,
I think it's more interesting than it has any right to be. Just before we sign off here, I think we've got 8 teams by my calculations. 8 of the 12 teams are playing against their Tabellennachbar, so the team next to them in the table. And then the other teams who are not part of that are LASK against Klagenfurt, which for most of the season has basically been like 4th v 5th or 3rd v 4th. So they're pretty close anyway. And then you've got the other tie is Austria Vienna against Hartberg, which is Austria Vienna below the line looking to get into the top six, and Hartberg above the line desperate not to fall out of the top six. So every tie is interesting in its own way.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a massive weekend for the league to return with all of the fixtures being very important, because yeah, we are already at a very crucial stage of the season where we only have several match days left until the league splits.
the split, the one that the controversial split. Yeah, we've got slightly more rounds than usual though before the split this time. I think it's, what is it, 6 games left before the split instead of the normal 4, or it was 5 games left instead
five.
Of the normal 4.
Yes, it's 5.
Yeah, 5 games left instead of the normal 4, exactly. And that starts off with Friday night, Salzburg against Sturm of all teams. So a massive clash at the top of the table, currently separated by 2 points right now. That could look very different after the first 90 minutes of 2024 in the league. That's huge. And then at the other end of the table, Lustenau, winless Lustenau, are taking on VSG Tirol. So the bottom two are battling. And everyone's keen not to say this, but if VSG Tirol win that game, like the relegation battle is... Even with the point split, it's like, surely like, it's such a big mental blow if VSG were to win that game. Lustenau would just be so far adrift.
But then again, the points will be halved. So never say never in this case. Then again, there's also a different question if there is anything realistically happening at Lustenau that could turn the way the season goes. But... theoretically and mathematically, it's not going to be that.
What happened with the Kennedy-Boateng affair? Did you see this over the winter? I saw it come up and I didn't actually see what happened with it, because...
I think,
His club Santa Clara, they like launched an appeal to FIFA because he joined on a free to Austria Lustenau. And then Santa Clara was saying like, no, we sort of had him under contract. Like, he shouldn't have been able to sign that. Therefore... you made a clerical error and you owe us his release clause, which in this case was 4 million euros, which for Lustenau is like an absolutely...
It's their yearly budget, basically. So.
Yeah, it is absolutely ridiculous how far out of the realms of reality that would be for Lustenau to pay 4 million euros for Kennedy Boateng. But they were sort of waiting for FIFA to decide whose fault it is. And I haven't heard any more about it since. So I guess Austria Lustenau
pay anything. There was nothing coming up after that because Lustenau proved their point. They said that they checked everything, and from their perspective, there is an absolute no-go that they did everything right. And they sent the documents to the FIFA, and probably it was swept under the carpet somehow, or it is still in progress. But we'll see, because there was no decision or follow-up for that.
Yeah, I didn't see anything more, so I assumed it was sort of still being dealt with or nothing had happened. But the Santa Clara cash grab may still go on. So which of the games, though, coming back to the Bundesliga, which of these games interests you the most? Because, as you say, so many games against the teams next to each other in the table.
Yeah, obviously the Friday fixture with Salzburg and Graz catches the eye, but... I would say my personal favorite in this fixture list would be VAC against Rapid Wien, because yeah, we've seen how clumsy Rapid looks at this point, and probably not as confident as they could have been. And then again, Viate had a pretty decent run at the end of the autumn part of the season. And it's really interesting to see in which form they appear, how they cope without Bamba, their huge transfer outwards. This could be one of the most interesting games of the weekend.
Yeah, I think that's a great pick to leave with, because that is Viate in seventh on 23 points against Rapid in sixth. So the other side of the split on 24 points, just 1 point ahead. Both teams have won six games this season, and they'll be absolutely targeting 3 points. Both sides there know that if they want to finish top six, 3 points there would go a long, long way to helping them in that case. I think I'll probably be at Austria Vienna against Hartberg. And I think that's one that if Hartberg win that, they're going to be fine. They're going to be top six. I mean, they probably are going to be top six anyway, but stranger things have happened that, you know, you can drop down the table pretty quickly in five games, and it always gets very, very, very close at the split. But I think if Hartberg took 3 points against Austria Vienna,
Hartberg managed to save their main character of the whole autumn. So Maxi Antrop hasn't gone anywhere. So hopefully we'll see a continuation of their great run. So, I really hope to see them in top six. They clearly deserve it this season.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
Marcus Schopp has done a brilliant job, basically as always.
As always, yeah. It's not going to fall apart just because Christoph Lang has left. It will be interesting to see how, if they drop off, how far they drop off. But I don't think, I don't think they'll completely fall apart just because of the loss of one player. But I can't wait to find out. I'm really looking forward to the games coming back, and we'll be back as soon as we can be with the next other Bundesliga podcast, once the Bundesliga has actually resumed for 2024. We'll see you soon. Thanks for listening.
Bye.